try to finish 2 Samuel 3 and 4 tonight. So we'll spend our time in chapter 3, chapter 4, more specifically get through this. We introduced, last Sunday, right? We were done with the gospel meeting last Sunday. So we'll finish this section here talking about David, Abner, in the house of Saul in particular. Tonight we'll talk about Abner, Joab, and Ishbosheth, really the end of the house of Saul. Prayer. We'll pick on Evan since he's no longer with us. You mind leading us in a prayer?
Sure, no problem. Let's all pray together. Almighty and righteous Father in heaven, we thank you so much for this beautiful day, Father, opportunities that we've had. We thank you especially for the opportunity to come to assemble this midweek time to look at your word, to enjoy the edification, Father. Thank you so much as well for the Old Testament scriptures and the learning and the wisdom that provides for us, Father, so that we can gain better discretion and wisdom in our own lives. We pray that you help us to cherish these things to our heart, help us to grow as much as we can to the pleasing of you, Father. We pray this on your Son's one precious name. Amen.
Amen. Okay, so to more or less finish the third, fourth chapters of the book 2 Samuel. We've got to summarize the story of Abner, who is killed by Joab, and then the death of Ishbosheth after Abner's deflection over to David. The house of Saul is losing its strength. As you notice, chapter 3 of 2 Samuel, verse 1, it clearly states that the house of David is growing stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul is growing weaker and weaker. Remember, in this chapter, chapter 3, it demonstrates in Hebron there were sons and children born here to David, verses 2 through 5. And there's this continual war going on in verse 6, the civil war, if you will, between the house of Saul and the house of David. We've talked about the internal conflict between God's people. One of the things that archaeologists likes to talk about is the amount of idolatry and division and problems in their findings when they're excavating in this land, and the common idols. They find idols all the time. And so they mock often the so-called spiritual nature of God's supposed people. Of course, archaeology mostly being atheistic in their approach. But if you read the Bible here, you'll notice a people that are not at rest. They're fighting inwardly often. And the unification that will take place for really a short period of time, maybe 65, 70 years after David here in 2 Samuel chapter 5 is where he'll start to actually gain the power and the unification will take place. And then into Solomon's reign, after these periods of time in the Old Testament, the entire Old Testament history, what are we reading about more than anything else over and over again? That's a general question. It's not a specific. But why do we have prophets constantly in the Old Testament? What is their common message?
Return
to the Lord. Yeah. It's not a message of, you're doing great, guys. You know, the Bible, if you think about it, is more negative in many ways than it is positive. And I'm probably being very kind in saying it that way. And I'll make one final statement. When you think about Jesus, when you get to him, what does he talk more about when it comes to eternity, heaven or hell? There's more said about hell in the red letters, if you have a red letter version Bible, than there is heaven. So there must be a reason, even today. So I could make a lot more comments, but I'll try to stay with the text here. I do want to talk about Joab just a little bit, because Joab's an interesting guy. We're not emphasizing him as much, but it's kind of pop quiz information. What do you know about Joab? Interesting guy here. What does he do in the third chapter, about verse 22, after Abner deflects and goes back to David? And Joab apparently is out to battle. He's in a skirmish, and he shows back up after Abner and David had met and made a covenant. In verse 22 of chapter 3, it says that Joab came after pursuing a troop, and he brought in a great spoil with them. That's kind of Joab's nature. Joab is a warrior. I mean, he's a vicious guy. I mean, he's a guy that doesn't seem to show a lot of mercy. It's kind of maybe a black and white type thinker, we might say. He's just the way it is. And when Joab found out here in verse 24 of chapter 3 that Abner had come unto David, what is Joab's reaction? Is that true or false? Why do you think of Joab thought that way? He's a warrior. So this is kind of a sub-study on our text here, but I went back and I analyzed the summary of Joab's life. And so from beginning to ending, do you remember? Well, let's just look at it. Someone get 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 16, just to look at who Joab is a little bit more specifically. I don't want to spend a lot of time on Joab primarily, but I do want to, again, summarize this text. 1 Chronicles 2, verse 16, if you have it.
Now the sisters were Zeruah and Abigail. The sons of Zeruah were Abishai, Joab, and Azazel. Abigail bore Amasa, and father of Amasa was Jephthah of Ishmael.
Okay, if you analyze that relationship, Joab was the son of Zeruiah, that's David's sister. Well, that would make him David's nephew. And so Joab is a relation. He's a relation. And so Joab, along with his brothers Abishai and Asahel. Remember, who is it that kills Asahel? First part of 2 Samuel. It's Abner. And yet Joab's a part of David's military inner circle. And he's loyal to the family. He's obviously skilled in battle, and he has prominence with David and rises to power. But here again in 2 Samuel chapter 3, I'm keying in on some things that are interesting to me that you'll see in relation to Joab. And I like Joab in one sense. He's a man of decision. But he does some things that are interesting in the sense that David doesn't have him killed. David doesn't kill him. You remember one person in particular that Joab will kill that's very close to David? His son Absalom. Because Absalom did what to his dad? Yep.
Of course, David had commanded that he be done away with. Too.
Yeah. Do you happen to remember when David? Now watch this. David is mourning his son Absalom after he's killed. Absalom, my son. Do you remember what Joab says to David on the morning of Absalom? He said, "Quit. Why are you mourning over this sorry son?" Basically. This is Joab. Yep. So, Joab is this guy. I mean, is he loyal to David? The house of David?
I don't think so. He's loyal to himself. I think he's loyal to the
son. Okay.
He's not loyal to David because he chewed David out.
So here's all the different character studies. I said a second ago, I admire him in one. He's a man of decision. He's a guy that had determination. He reminds me of a lot of business-minded men that are very shrewd. Okay, fair enough. But let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 2. You're right, Cortland. I had to remember your name. Made the comment that who will kill Joab? It'll be Solomon, David's son Solomon, that will have him killed when Solomon takes over the throne. And so, yes, that's a good point, Pete. Yeah, kind of a 4,000-year-old soap opera here. All right, I like that. Look at chapter 3. Let's just go back to chapter 3, verse 24. Joab comes into the king. He's not afraid to confront David. He's not afraid to do a lot of things. This is a guy, and this is another one of those accounts that as I've been studying this, I've been wondering why King David will have executed an Amalekite who finished off King Saul, the anointed of God. You remember that? And the Amalekite came to David. And here in chapter 4, in just a moment, you're going to have these two men that will kill Ishbosheth. David, your enemy. And those two individuals, looks like they're captains of the army of Saul. They were loyal. But when they kill Ishbosheth after Abner has deflected, they behead Ishbosheth. And you remember what they do? They go straight to David. Now, do you think any of these guys that go straight to David thought they were going to get killed by David? So what, again, is going on? And you've got a Joab in the middle of all this who's pretty rash. He kills Abner here in just a second. But David won't kill him. He'll rebuke him. Look at what something that caught my attention today here. Chapter 3. So Joab, verse 24, chapter 3, thinks of the conspiracy. I think the way you said that, Jerry, is good. He's a warrior. He sees generals and warriors and army guys usually look at things in terms of battle. This guy's out. He ain't up to no good. We've been fighting him. We've been in civil war, civil unrest. Been 7 years or so. David, we've been fighting him, and we've been fighting him and Saul. There's something in Joab's heart. And he says in verse 25, "Thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner, that he came to deceive thee, and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou doest. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah. But David didn't know this. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly," privately, secretly. And the text, my margin says peaceably. The word quietly, or what do you have in the New King James Version? Did it say privately? I thought that's what it said. Another translation could be peaceably. So Joab and Abner are meeting out here. Okay, let's say peaceably. Do you think Joab had peaceably in his mind? No. Stabs him in the gut. And smote him. It even says the fifth rib, and he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. This guy's bearing a grudge. This guy has not forgot about Abner killing his brother. But look at what David does when he hears of it. He says in verse 28, "I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, or that is a leper, or that leaneth on a staff, or that falleth on the sword, or that lacketh bread." What's he saying about Joab's progeny from here on out? Going to have some health problems, going to have some poverty issues. There's a curse here because of his attitude. I would say that that verse right there, if I think of cause and effect, and I believe in "be not deceived," Galatians 6, verse 7, "for God is not mocked. Whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap." There's a principle in this right here. And that's where I go back and I say, I like Joab in one sense, if I'm learning from these characters. But this is a man that's going to have a lot of causal effects, consequences that are handed down throughout his family history because of who he was. Now think about that as you study the rest of the Bible and look at your own life and see how we're training up and raising our own children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
He was the commander of the entire army.
That's right.
God.
Yeah.
Joab was a very important person.
Maybe he's like a Patton or somebody. You know, anybody remember Patton, World War II? What was he all about? Was he about showing favor or kindness to the enemy? He had his place. MacArthur, noble warriors, Cortland, and then James.
When you think about Abner, I have to wonder if in the back of his mind, when he usurps the kingdom, I wonder if in the back of his mind he's thinking about the prophecy in Genesis 49, "the scepter shall not depart from him." Obviously, he knows the house of Saul is not, but the house of Judah is forbidden. So you have to wonder if that's in his mind. But more importantly, in chapter 26 and in chapter 24 of 1 Samuel, you have Abner being a direct witness of him sparing Saul's life two times.
Yep.
The first time when he fell off the road, the second time when he set a spear by his head in his sleep. And Abner was supposed to be awake while watching over the king. And he called out to Abner and he said, "What you have done is not good. You deserve the death." And so he understands one thing about David. Man, and God is with him. And Saul even confesses that. "I know that Jehovah is with you and that you shall be king." So keeping that aside as a backdrop to this context really brings forward why his motive is the way it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. We, I think, pointed this out last time about there in chapter 3, verses 9 through 10, when Abner emphatically states that God's plan is for David to rule, not Ishbosheth. Who put Ishbosheth up? Abner did. So you're right. I mean, you're pointing out principles and promises and the covenant being made. But I want you to watch this in chapter 3. What in verse 31 does David do? And Joab must capitulate to. You could read it through the, you know, few verses there. Someone read verses 31. Victor, do you mind reading 2 Samuel 3, verses 31 through 33?
And David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, gird yourselves with sackcloth, and mourn for Abner." King David followed the coffin. So they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king sang a lament over Abner and said, "Should Abner die as a fool dies?"
So David here seems to not be naive to who Joab is, his character. Look at the next verse. When he's emphasizing the death of Abner.
"Your hands were not bound, nor your feet put in fetters. As a man falls before wicked men, so you fell. And all the people wept over him again."
Notice how he says, "as you fell before wicked men." What's that say? What's that saying? Again, who killed him?
Joab
did. Who's Joab? His nephew, general of the army.
He knows he's a scoundrel.
Yeah, and he's making him mourn here. Yes, sir. James, sorry, I didn't mean to forget you a second ago. Go ahead.
This makes me think of how oftentimes we will let people that we're related to blur lines that they shouldn't have. Even we will very easily hold our boundaries with someone else. Oh, hey, that's a boundary we set. But when it comes to our family, since we know them better, since we're so close to them, we will let them
So, I told you we were going to dive a little deeper into questions. Because remember, again, what kind of a man is David at the end of the day? How many times does it repeat? He's a man after whose own heart. And I want us to remember that. So, notice here in the third chapter again, the end of verse 34... It says, "and all the people wept again over Abner." Do you see that? I have to wonder if in that text Joab was sitting over there kind of, was he weeping? You know, this is where you have a word like "all" that is the idea of metonymy. It means generally all. Okay? I don't think Abner thought he was fixing to be killed. You're right. Yes, ma'am.
A couple of things, and this is a question. I want to know if maybe David killed those men who killed Saul and Ishbosheth because they were kings. And they were considered God's anointed. That was different than Abner, in my mind. I could be wrong. As to why he did not respond the same way to the death of Abner as he did to Saul. And so that's my question. Could that be a reason why? The other thing I wanted to point out is that this, at Joab and Abner, show us that not everybody's perspective is true, even though it is true to them. The perspective that Joab gave to David in his mind was true. Abner was a spy and he was there to deceive him. But it was not actually true. And David, I felt like, knew that. David understood that, you know, Joab, that's your perspective and it is not true. Sometimes we need to understand when a person's perspective is not true and not react in a way as if it is just because that person thinks it's true and believes it to be true. That doesn't mean that it is.
Yeah, and before Cortland goes, notice what verse 38 says. Can you get it with Mila when,
yeah,
about Abner? Just, and then I'm going to make a statement back to, go ahead. What does he say about, yeah, chapter 3, verse 38.
It says, then the king said to his servants, do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel?
So here you have again David affirming the character of Abner. Now, Cortland brought up, as we've talked about, when David could have killed Saul twice, and Abner was the one responsible, 1 Samuel. Remember, David gets on to Abner and says, you should have protected him. That was your job. Yes, sir.
With regard to the reason why David does not kill Joab, or on the surface this appears to be nepotism, I do not think so. I think the reason that you have the statement here in verse 39 that the Lord shall repay the evildoer according to his wickedness is because in the back of David's mind, what had he just been guilty of? He just murdered Uriah. He was worthy of the death penalty two times over. Wife, that's the death penalty. And he murdered a man, that's the death penalty. Furthermore, he used other people to do it. The book of Deuteronomy says that he's cursed of God. Yet God spared him, but he pronounces a fourfold curse. One of the fourfold curse of that prophecy is that the sword would not depart. David, I believe, the reason he does not hurt Absalom, the reason he does not hurt Joab, the reason he doesn't hurt Abishai, the reason he doesn't hurt his family is because this is God's doing, and I'm not going to tamper with it. I deserve this. This is God's pronouncement. If I'm to balk against this or resist in any way, then I will heap even further judgment on myself, thus voiding my forgiveness that God has bestowed upon me. And so the reason he doesn't do anything about this is not nepotism. This is a reverence for Jehovah. And he has accepted this as the Lord is going to do what he's going to do. But I will not live. That's why he's a man
after God. Interesting. Yep. Okay, yeah. Just interesting thoughts. When you analyze the text, going back to what we talked about, when was Saul's kingdom rejected? 1 Samuel 15. The Amalekites. 1 Samuel 16 is when David is anointed or chosen, but it doesn't take place. David does not take authority. Really, he doesn't get it till chapter 5. And these transitional, there's the word transition in chapter 3. If you'll notice this word, verse 10, chapter 3, verse 10. He's talking to Ishbosheth. Abner is. What does verse 10 say? Translate the kingdom from the house of Saul. There was this transition. I think sometimes when we see again the rejection in chapter 15 in 1 Samuel, as we've pointed out, the assumption by a lot of Bible readers is, well, that's it for Saul. He's done. God rejected him. It's David's turn. He's in. But that's not what happens. There's this transition. And it happens through the series of historical events that takes place. How long does Saul reign? 40 years. How long will David reign? It'll say 40 years. If you look at 2 Samuel chapter 5, we were talking about, this is kind of a fast forward, a prelude of some of what we'll get into Sunday morning, Lord willing. Look at verse 4 of chapter 5. Someone was asking about the age of David. We were talking about timelines. Oh, that was the MERS. And I shared some information with them after that class. But notice a little bit of the timeline. How old was David there in verse 4? 30 years. And then he reigns there 40 years. So add 40 to 30 and you get 70-ish. Now, go back to, again, to the days of David and Goliath. We presume on his age, he was likely somewhere around 17, maybe 18. Could have been a little bit younger when he slew the bear, the lion, guarding the sheep. We think maybe around 14 years of age. So you can kind of put a period of time here. That's 15 years ago. So 2 Samuel 5 here, verse 4, gives you a little bit of a time stamp. And so verse 5 of chapter 5 tells you the 7 years and 6 months of this kind of, it seems, transitional period of time, this translation that you're talking about back in chapter 3, verse 10. So sometimes we miss those little markers. There's quite a bit of controversy going on. Let's talk about this just a little bit. In chapter 4, verses 5 through 7, 2 Samuel, and I want to ask a few questions and we'll get through these two chapters. Without Abner, he's dead now. Ishbosheth will be murdered by his own captains, and the names there, Bana, Rechab, 2 Samuel 4, verses 5 through 7. They'll bring his head to David, but again, instead of rewarding them, David executed them for killing a righteous man. I think it is interesting what differentiates Abner. He seems to have known the promises. He seems to have known, maybe like Jonathan. Jonathan, who's his daddy? Saul. He's going to be loyal to his daddy too, as best as he can. Is Jonathan always loyal to his daddy? No, he sometimes says, this isn't good. We need to feed these soldiers. Things like that. But Jonathan also knew David, and Jonathan was respectful. He loved David. And again, David is God's anointed. So there's definitely a connection here. So I've thought about these two individuals here, these captains who bring the head of Ishbosheth, Saul's son, to David. And he will execute them, verses 9 through 12. Perhaps their ignorance is not bliss, like many. The Amalekite, again, who killed Saul. They were completely oblivious. I want to say something about ignorance. How many of you believe ignorance? Don't answer the question. But how many of you think ignorance is okay? How many of you think that in the day of judgment, God's going to say, that's okay, you didn't know? In the day of judgment, or when the Lord returns in 2 Thessalonians 1, 8, and 9, do you remember what Paul said to the Thessalonians? In flaming fire, taking vengeance on them that know not, is the first class. Who are those that know not? That's ignorant. And them that obey not. So don't let ignorance become an excuse for your inactivity or your unfaithfulness, or for anybody. Our course of action in life is to not allow ignorance. It is to try to help it in every way we can. And it's a part of our duty. So I was waiting to say that as I think about these scenarios and what's going on. David wasn't ignorant. Joab wasn't ignorant. Joab just had motive. And I think you've hit on it. He was very self-intentioned. David doesn't overlook it. There's a curse on his family. There will be consequences because of who he is. Remember, he'll bury Ishbosheth's head with Abner at Hebron. And through these events, David consistently honored even his enemies. And so we've talked about, this is a foreshadowing, the teaching of Christ, to love your enemies. Matthew 5, verse 44. Love your enemies. Pray for them. So in some sense, David had that spirit too. I think that that's a must. All right, let's talk about a few questions here and see if we can. Talking about what is said of Abner's influence. I've slept since then. What is said of Abner's influence over the house of Saul? Look at chapter 3, verse 6. What is said of Abner's influence over the house of Saul? Kind of kept Saul's house alive, it seems. If you look at chapter 4, or you look at when Abner deflects, you'll see Ishbosheth's insecurity. He recognized Abner for who he was. Now that's important. And again, I think David knew that too. Yeah, that's a good point too. All right, second question here is, when Saul's daughter, Michal, was given to David, what were her feelings towards him? 1 Samuel 18:20.
She loved
the man. Yep, okay. All right, she has to be returned too. Remember, David says, hey, she never touched him again, though. That's right. But I want my wife, I want her back. There was a covenant thing there. Yeah. Remember the second husband or the, he's following, and what does Abner say? Go back. I mean, again. All right, why was Michal with, there he is, Palti, 1 Samuel 25:44. Yeah. Saul gave Michal to Palti to spite David. To spite him. Again, character of Saul. Can you imagine?
Which is interesting. Was she his to give away?
Yeah. It's a different time and culture. I'm just bringing up the questions. What does Joab tell David was the reason for Abner coming to him? We've already answered it, but 2 Samuel 3:25. What did Joab say to David?
Spy.
Spy to deceive, yeah. Okay. What does Joab pretend to do to kill Abner? Yeah, 2 Samuel 3:27. Privately or peaceably, then he killed him. All right. 2 Samuel 3:30. For whose blood is Abner said to have died? Well, Joab said, I'm killing you because why? Or I killed him because of why? Vengeance. Yeah, so we learn in the Bible, vengeance is whose? Yeah, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. All right. Number 7. In what way does David curse the house of Joab? 2 Samuel 3:29. Yeah, fourfold. Disease, weakness, poverty. Again, if I'm looking at this principally speaking, there's a causal effect here. Do families today suffer because of the actions of fathers? Why'd you laugh?
Because it's obvious.
I don't know why. I heard Ethel goes, of course. And she's laughing. I said, why'd you laugh? She said, because it's obvious. So tell us more. All right. Yeah. Fatherless children and so forth. Sure. So. All right, where are we? Number 8. As David leads the nation in mourning for Abner, What does he refuse to do until sunset?
Eat.
Yeah, that's till the sun sets, he will not eat bread. 2 Samuel 3:35. All right, four more. Let's go to the next screen. Number 9, how does David describe the sons of Zeruiah? Sometimes my tongue and my brain are in better conditions, but Wednesdays aren't my favorite day. Those are long days, and they are for you too. All right, and what are the names of the two living? Look at 2 Samuel 3:39. What does he describe? How does he describe the sons? 2 Samuel 3:39. That's the first part of the question. It's actually a twofold question. Yeah, too harsh. That's good. There you go. There's some details there. So again, you're paying attention here to the text. And then what were their names? The two living. Yeah. And Joab and Abishai. Okay. And then number 10, 2 Samuel 4:4. Tell me about Mephibosheth. We didn't really talk about this much, but when did he become lame? Chapter 4, verse 4. Yeah, that's right. Good, good, Eric. 5 years old, tidings came. So, again, and there will be honor. Mephibosheth will be shown honor, and David will again continue to honor the house of Saul, his enemy. I like how in 2 Samuel 4, verse 8, when those two captains bring the head, they say, "Behold the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life." Which sought thy life. Okay. All right, number 11 question. Before having them executed, about what event does David tell Bana, and Rechab? Look at 2 Samuel 4, verse 10. What event does David recall? So there, that's why I'm tying together the actions here that are taking place. When one told me, saying, "Behold, Saul is dead," thinking to have brought good tidings. That's what David says. "You thought you brought good tidings. I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings." So what does that say about the individuals coming to David? They thought they were bringing good tidings. Now, this brings up a lot in my mind. When you get to the study of the book of Job, what did all of Job's friends generally think that Job was guilty of? Sin. So that, Evelyn, back to your point a moment ago. You can think something, and someone may genuinely think that's right, but that doesn't make it right. So, yes, these men thought they were doing good. Well, David didn't.
This also reminds me of something that is really kind of fundamental. You know, David being the leader, there is a huge lack of communication.
Yeah, there.
I mean,
that's a good point.
I can only imagine, because that's a massive group of people that would, you know, David at the top to get his message, get the direction in which they're going, the way that he tries to obey God. Now you just shrink that in just a house with a dad.
Yeah.
And how much lack of communication can be there amongst the husband and wife and the kids, and, you know, just in the way that we react.
So you make this point, really. Lack of communication. What household, church, what exists, what business exists when you have a lack of communication and exists well? So that's why we're told in the church to preach what? The word. What are elders responsible for doing here? Making sure you're edified so that there's no lack of communication. I need you to know clearly what the Bible teaches so that you can execute it and do well. And it'll put us on site. All right, finally, David buried Ishbosheth's head where? 2 Samuel 4, verse 12. I'm sorry. Yeah, where does David bury the head of Ishbosheth? Yeah. Yeah. Hebron, right? Okay, so that's kind of the third. We got through the fourth chapter. Are y'all amazed?
I like First Kings 2, when he said, he's talking about, he said, therefore do not do according to his wisdom, do not let his gray hair go down to the grave, and please.
Yeah.
I like that.